Hello and welcome to this episode of No Blasters with me, Kieran Bartlett. Today's episode is sponsored by Manscaped. We love Manscaped, they love us. Get on over to manscaped.com, use the code NOBLASTERS20, that's the word NOBLASTERS, the number 20, all one thing, NOBLASTERS20, for 20% off and free shipping. It's time to spring clean yourself, alright? You know, maybe you're looking at the house and going, do you know, I think I'm going to get rid of the stuff out of those drawers or whatever. Speaking of drawers, whip them down. Get rid of that winter bush, right? That's what we're all about, trimming the hedges at Manscaped. So I would highly recommend using the Lawnmower 5.0, which is like the wee sort of neatly shaped razor for the bag and surrounding region. And it so it comes with like skin safe technology, so you don't snag the bag. And also has like wee LED lights. Basically, if you needed to, you could be trapped inside some sort of dark place, some sort of cave, some sort of terrible cage somewhere. And if you have a Lawnmower 5.0, you will be able, I mean, you could be submerged in water and you will be able to shave that bag and be all nice and clean for the springtime. So get on over, as I say, to manscaped.com, use the code NOBLASTERS20 for free shipping and 20% off. It's a great deal. Today's episode is also sponsored by the greatest little bistro ever, Joxer. Joxer is open every day from 9 until 4, and it opens from 5 until 9, 5 until 8 really, on Thursday through to Saturday, Thursday through to Sunday, sorry. So on those days, on those late nights, Joxer are now running an offer for £25 per person, two cocktails, two sharing plates, or two small plates. So they're sort of like, it's sort of like tapas. And you get a wee cocktail, some tapas, and it's great times. Food's great. This is in the locations in Bangor and Hollywood at the moment. They do also have a location in Hillsborough. The venues are also available for private hire and private parties. So if you want to find out about those, you can get in touch with them at hello@joxer.co.uk and give them a wee shout about your private event that you want to do there. I would highly recommend doing that. I also highly recommend going in for brunch during the day. This is the home of chicken and waffles, chaffles. Everywhere else copies Joxer. That's all they're doing. They're just trying to be, they've realised that Joxer had something and now they're just trying to do it. That's what everywhere else is doing. So get on in there and try it. You get your sriracha, your maple. Great days. So check that out over at joxer.co.uk, and if you want, you can, as I say, email them at hello@joxer.co.uk and chat to them about a private event. Today's guest is none other than Belfast sporting legend Carl Frampton. What a fucking great time. It's great to have you,
mate. Thanks for having me,
Do you know, I don't like to surprise people, but I do believe this will be a surprise. We very nearly met one time, right, years ago on a plane going from, I want to say, London City of London.
Oh, airport. Great little airport.
Yeah, the wee tiny one.
Yeah.
And the only thing I don't like about it is they have a wee habit of cancelling on our flight to Belfast because, like, nobody shows up or something. So I was getting a wee flight home and it was sort of one of the times where it was kind of busy. And I'm going, right, okay, I'm getting on the flight. And there was a chair beside me and you sat in it. And this was like, this is maybe pre-pandemic. I think it was pre-pandemic. And you sit down and I'm like, holy fuck, that's Carl Frampton. And I'm sitting there in my head going, don't say anything, don't be a dick, don't be weird. But sort of also definitely say, all right, champ, right? Like, say something, but don't come off like a fucking stalker. And then just as we're about to take off and I'm getting ready to drop all my banter on you, the woman comes down and goes, there's free seats up the front. And you just went, yep. And I'm just sitting there going, so it didn't happen. So I'm glad it's finally.
No. Sorry,
I'm glad it's on. No, here, it's not your fault, mate. If you're watching, or stewardess, I've got your number. I don't actually. I'd be really weird, wouldn't it? But what a great time. So what's been the crack? What have you been up to of late?
Well, I've been pretty busy, if I'm being honest. Doing stuff with TNT. Punditry and commentating on fights. It's been a bit quiet now.
Isn't that like BT Sport now?
Yeah,
isn't it?
So TNT is now BT. So did a takeover from Warner Brothers, Warner and Discovery. Now I own
Mental.
Former BT. So,
right.
Yep, that's going well.
Do you enjoy doing the punditry? Like,
it's a gift. It's the easiest job in the world. Literally.
Sort of keeps you in.
Yeah,
involved,
I mean,
as well.
Say what you see. You watch a fight, and the commentating's a bit harder. If I'm being honest, like, you have to. you say it's work, but it's not really. You sit and watch a fight, but yeah. you literally can't take your eyes off it because you constantly have to talk about everything that's happening. The punditry is, I mean, you go for a piss and all if you want and then come back and ask someone what happened there. And then you just talk about the fight, just say what you see. And it keeps me involved in boxing. Because that's an art. People keep asking me, do you miss it? And I don't. And I think that's one of the reasons why I don't.
Like, you would never think of going into coaching or anything, or running a gym or anything? Or?
Nah. I don't know. I'd rather train, get involved with amateurs and help out my old amateur club if I had the time, rather than get involved with a pro game. It's like dirty business. And a lot of these pros, I think, knowing a lot of them, like some of them, you need to hold their hand walking across the road, literally tell them everything and control their life for them to get to the top of the sport. Mental. So, yeah, I'd rather do it somewhere else, maybe.
See, from like chatting to some other boxers like in the last year on the pod, like, it is such an eye-opener, because like I would have watched loads of boxing when I was growing up, and I'd probably watch it a bit less now because I also watch like other fighting sports, like other combat stuff like MMA or whatever. So I don't always watch boxing as much, but I do follow the stuff from here a bit. But like, as a fan, it's been such an eye-opener of like what actually goes into, you know, because like I would say I would have had more than a casual interest in it, but like I wouldn't have really give a fuck about, like, in the same way, like I'll watch a lot of football, don't know what it's like to do that, like, do you know what I mean? So it's sort of interesting. But
I think there'll be a lot of boxers in the same boat, genuinely, that literally don't really know what's going on in the game. And that's one of the issues with it. Like, typically they come from backgrounds and areas like me where no one has an idea about business or what. And you know, a lot of the times, well, I was anyway, very naive and trusting. And it's probably the wrong business to be in if you trust everybody.
I think that as well sometimes about like what we do as well. I don't know, it's like very different, but like more so probably in TV than in stand up. When you come, I think, from like working class background, like you can leave yourself open to get shafted like quite badly. Like, I mean, I remember years ago, like I signed a contract with some place. I was writing scripts, like, and I did a contract with them for one TV show that I had pitched to them, and they were optioning it. And then whenever I came to the second one, the producer said to me, listen, it's the same contract as before. All I've done is change the name of the show. So sort of like, just sign it and get it over to me. You know, we'll fucking keep this running. And they changed other things in the contract, which I go, now you're specifically lying to my face. Like,
did you notice that beforehand?
I didn't notice it. I didn't notice it. Because do you know what I did, basically? I signed an idea over to them forever, which normally you would sign an idea over for like a year or 2 years or 18 months. Usually not longer than 2 years. And what you're saying is, you have this idea, you can shop this to like broadcasters for a year, and then it comes back to me, I own it again. And they normally would give you a bit of money for that. But at this time, when you're starting out, you're maybe not getting money. You're maybe just, people are going, listen, I'm going to take a punt on you. I'll try and get your show made. Give me a year or give me a year and a half. And on the first contract, it was a year and a half. And then on the second one, I discover, when I go, surely that's run out now. And I'm saying, can I pitch it somewhere else? And it says on it, in perpetuity, which means
forever.
I would have to go back to them if I wanted to pitch it and go, can I buy that off you, my own idea? And you're like, God, that's fucking stinking. So like,
do you want to name and shame them? No,
I won't. I'm a slave to democracy, and I won't do it. I'll be diplomatic. It was just, I was rare. Like, so I mean, what? So firstly, I was going to ask, so how long have you been sort of out of, like, how long have you been retired from fighting?
About 2.5 years.
Enjoying it?
Yeah, I am, to be honest. It's, I mean, I'm busy obviously doing the stuff with TNT. I've got the whiskey on the go now as well, which, there it is.
Living the dream. Stablemate.
With
House of Jackal.
It's going well. We're actually, it's an exclusive to you, but you're saying the show's not going to go out for a couple of weeks, so it won't be an exclusive by that point. But we're now in Tesco's. We've landed in Tesco's today. So
today?
Yep.
Holy shit.
So, massive.
That is massive.
About that. And we're the quickest. I'm hearing the quickest alcoholic beverage from launch to get in on the shelves in Tesco.
Holy shit.
And we should have been in pre-Christmas, only there was a balls up somewhere down the line. And
oh, mate.
We've had to wait a while. But
that's fucking mental. In. Congratulations. Yeah, yeah. That's fucking
mental.
No,
it's going really well. Yeah. That's keeping me busy.
So, like, how does that sort of thing come about? I mean, is it because I've wondered about this because, you know, you see different sports stars or sometimes actors, whatever, get involved with this. Is it something where, like, because presumably when you're training, like, you're not on the pints, like, so no. What sort of would it be like when you maybe finish a fight and you go for a drink? Well, is whiskey your thing, is it?
Well, I've always liked that. I mean, I don't go on the whiskey all night, but I don't mind a whiskey at the end of a night or sometimes a whiskey with a mixer or something like that. But a guy approached me while I was in Dubai for my last fight, so about 2.5 years ago. Right. This guy's a friend of mine called Paul Lawther. He worked for a company called OneCom, who were sponsoring me, telecommunications company.
Right.
He's no background in alcohol or anything like that. And he just said, look, what do you ever think about doing a whiskey? And I had a conversation with him. He explained what we'll do. We'll go to a distillery and we'll talk to them about it and get them to back it. You know, it's your whiskey, it's your brand, but you have a lot of input and the
like the way it tastes.
The blend and how it tastes and the labelling and the name and everything else. So that's what I've done. So I've been very, very involved in it. We had an issue. I mean, we probably should have had this going a year before it was going. So we had a dispute, a copyright dispute with a South African winery.
Right.
Wine called The Stablemates.
Oh, right, okay.
So close enough, but it's a different category. Ours is spirits and ours is wine, so we ended up sorting it out with them. We're going right. Stablemate whiskey. We're going to be in America as well. I feel like I'm pumping Stablemate
it's mental because, like, when's it hitting the States?
Well, so we've had conversations with a few political figures in America. And I think that I'm not talking about Joe Biden.
I was going to say, Trump loves it.
But guys, well-to-do out there. We'll be in America first half of the year. And that's then mental. Hopefully that's when it starts to take off.
Mate, that's mental. Like, I used to do whiskey all night. Saying that as if, like, you know, I'm doing that every night. I wasn't, but when I used to go out on pints, I wasn't really on pints. I would have maybe done a double Jack with, you know, Diet Coke. That was my favorite, right? And then I've talked about this before, but I ruined myself at my brother's wedding, and I've never really gone back. I can't drink as much anymore at all. Like, I mean, even when I was away there, this has happened to me twice. I don't know if you've heard of this before. It's happened to me twice this year. Do you remember when we did? Was that a tea with me? I took a sip. You'd bought like some wee cocktail things, like, you know, pre-mixed cocktails or whatever. I took a wee sip of one and like went purple. Like, I've never had this. I'm like, you feel like you're on fire. I think it's called a flush or something. Asian flush.
Right.
It happened to me once when I was away there as well. Took like a wee sip of a very small cocktail. I'm wondering, is it gin that's doing it to me? Because I think it was gin in both these things. But I took a wee sip, mate. See, when I was away there, on this one night when I had this, Jesus Christ, like, I was probably like standing in the bathroom soaking my head in freezing cold water.
Of a sip of this?
A wee sip. Like, I hadn't even finished drinking it. It fucked me.
Jesus.
And I sort of when I got and went, I feel roasted. Like, it was mental. Mad health issues. But it was fucking crazy. But see, when you're on whiskey, when you do it all night, and maybe you don't sort of do a few pints and then have a couple of whiskeys, I would get like skull fire the next morning. You know, you wake up and you're still sort of just like, and it's just roasting. And then I would get the dreads hard. Like, you know, where you're like, and I would basically remember most of the night, but I'd be going like, oh my God, and it would be like,
that's any time you've been pissed though, isn't it?
I don't know. See, when I used to drink beers, I used to sort of go home and I'd get gut rot the next day, but mentally it was fine.
Yeah.
I was on whiskey, like, there was times where I'd be, like, texting, like, you know, texting my best mate, being like, you know, We good, mate? Because I don't know if I fucking, I don't know if I tried to fucking fight your dial last night. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it was fucking mental.
Well, did you have a go at yet?
I haven't, but I will now. I'll do it right now.
Do it. I'll do it. Do that one because it's open. Yeah.
Now, here's a question. Is this a wee cork? Am I swigging straight out of the bottle?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus Christ. This is 12:30.
Here, that's not a good... That's. I mean, we're trying to promote the
no,
whiskey.
No, sorry. Sorry. It smells like a nice whiskey, I should say that. But for me, the smell hits me because my body goes, is it Lord Acklin's wedding? That's what my body does.
But sorry. So, obviously, we don't normally drink it out of a bottle as well.
Yeah, we're not normally tramps, but I am.
The feedback has been universally very, very good on this. So, but I'd be interested to see what you say. Like it?
It's righteous.
Yeah, smooth. Yeah. Smooth. People say smooth.
It doesn't. Doesn't
no.
It's not red in the throat.
Yeah, there you are.
But it's enough because there's one or two. There's one I used to drink called Maker's Mark.
Maker's Mark. Yeah.
And it was sort of smooth, but then here it gave you nothing.
Yeah. Can I have a go?
Yeah, have a wee go. That's definitely giving you enough that you're going, I'm on a whiskey here.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Yeah, thanks, mate.
It's sort of like, there's a wee sweetness off it as well.
Yeah,
it's
a wee bit of vanilla.
Yeah,
like,
it's not like, you know, sometimes it'd be like, you know, it tastes like, I don't want to say other brands that taste this way, but like, you know, sort of taste a wee bit, like just sharp. Yeah. Off, like, citrus. Yeah. There is one that I will talk about. I don't care about giving them shit. It was called Ardbeg, and it was a smoked whiskey.
Yeah.
Mate, did you ever smell TCP? You know, it's like, it was like stuff like if you had like bad acne on your back, they rub it on it. It was that. Like we do you know, do you remember the Duke of York, the bar?
Yeah, yeah.
They used to have like a mad range of whiskey, and we were in there one night. And we were all like, oh, we'll all order one that's like, you know, fucking $12.50 a shot or something, you know. We thought we were lords, like, and wankers. And we got it. And I remember smelling it. And we were all like, Jesus Christ. Jesus. And we all sort of sipped a wee bit of it. And every one of us, apart from one guy, was like, that's fucking leaping. And he just fucking necked the rest of it. So he was wrecked on it. And then was sick.
And it was a dear one, like an old, what, 12-year-old or something?
Like, I think it was old. And it was, I think they said it was like peat smoked. So it was like, it was like turf.
I don't like the smoky ones. They're too smoky.
Stinking, mate, that's actually fucking great.
A bit more like, the scotch is like a bit more smoky, isn't it?
And yeah. Do you know what's mental though? Because I don't really drink that much anymore at all.
You want to go on it?
It's a cross of I should get on that now, and I shouldn't drive. You know what I mean? It's a bit of both. It's fucking strong. What? That's stronger.
It's 40 ABV.
Yeah, that is. That's stronger than I am. Like, oh, mate, I like the wee signature and Jackal under it. No. Oh, what a great time! To be fair, we've had that sitting here for a while because we knew you were coming in. But yeah, I don't really drink that much anymore. It's the thing. I was away there last week, and I think the whole week. I on the last night I did get a wee bit pissed, but it was just had a couple of glasses. I mean, literally a couple of glasses of Prosecco, and I'm sitting going.
I'm exactly the same, and yeah. I mean, like, I for about 4 years, I went off a drink completely, didn't touch it while I was boxing. And then I've slowly got back into it. But one of the reasons why I went off it was because I was a fucking idiot when I was blocked. Like, not aggressive or anything, just stupid.
Aye.
And always make a fool out of myself. One of the other reasons was I fell down the stairs, and that scar on my head is why. Literally, her sister found me, pool of blood in the bottom of, thought I was dead.
Holy fuck.
Ambulance job, neck brace, back brace.
Imagine getting through a boxing career, scars, no. And then block one, mate. Yeah. That's mental.
Yeah, so that happened, that went off. But now I feel like I've matured a bit, and I can go and have a pint or two pints or a wee whiskey and take it easy. I don't have to get pissed every
time. Mental. So I had Tyrone on before, and I got him to smack me. And I'm not doing this again. I wouldn't ask you. I've learned. And
where did he hit you?
In the arm. In the
right.
Fair dig. Right. No gloves.
No, the hang. I swear to God. Right,
it
Tyrone.
Shit. It was shit.
Tyrone can't punch.
No, don't say this to me. Cause
why did it hurt you?
No, mate, did it hurt me? this is a true story. He punched me there. It bruised me there. It was bruised through my arm.
All right, Tyrone, I would
it
say.
Was shy. I mean, Tyrone can't punch.
Tyrone, he's a bit, he's tough and he fights. He fights like he can punch. But
I don't even know what that means.
I mean, he's like really, and he fights like he's my height. Like he could use all his attributes and just keep people behind a big long jab. But he likes to have a tear up, and everybody loves it, and I love watching it.
It's
I wouldn't say Tyrone's not a puncher.
Fuck off! All right,
I fought him.
He fucked my arm up. Right now, anyway, because this is my right. Because I got this point. I do you know what? I became naive and arrogant, right? Because I was talking to Mick Conlon as well, right? And I said to him, he was the first, I think he was the first boxer maybe that we had on. I think he might have been, or he's definitely one of the first ones I chatted to about it. And I was saying to him, what is the difference, say? Because one thing that was happening, I think, around that time was like some of the lads have been out and people are doing dickhead things. You're going, you think you're hardy and you're going to try and fight boxers. And I'm going, fuck's sake. But I asked, what was the difference between, say, like, the person you know in your life who can fucking hit you a proper dig and a boxer, right? Because I was going, I don't know if it's par or I knew it was definitely speed, right? And Mick was like, it's also accuracy. He was like, so I'm not trying to, you know, punch you in the head. He's like, I'm trying to land this knuckle
on your chin or here.
And I'm going, right, fair enough. And then I sort of went, I wonder what it's like to take a dig off a boxer. Like, it can't be that bad. And then, because one of my brothers, this is my theory. This is my actual theory. One of my brothers has the fucking boniest hand you've ever seen. When he punches you, it's like a fucking sword, right? And I went, right, fuck this, right? And we, like, him and our Kevin would have done, like, they did, like, taekwondo for a lot longer than I did, but I did it for a while and whatever. And so I'm like, I've taken a few digs off them and they know what they're doing. Mate. So stupid, right? So Tyrone digs me, bruises me right through. And now I have a bruise here because I did clay pigeon shooting for the first time the other day. And now I have a bruise here. My fucking arm, I said on our Patreon, my arm looks like an old person that's been held at knife point, you know what I mean? Someone's broken their house to steal the wedding rings. I'm not saying do that, by the way. I'm not condoning violence against the elderly, but like, it's fucking rare. And I sort of wonder, like, what's been like the worst sort of injury that you had from boxing, but also what's the worst one that you inflicted on somebody?
Injuries that I've had have been hand injuries. I've had a few operations on my hands there as well.
Yeah. Just from training or from in the
fights? From fights, actually. Right. So I broke. I went into a fight. This was my, was it my second last fight? A fight in Vegas, anyway, against an American called Taylor McCreary.
Right.
And I had to pull out of the one before because my hand broke the week before the fight. Me. So I went into the fight. And the fight was, the hand still wasn't fully healed.
Aye.
But I felt like I couldn't pull out again. So I went into the fight with a broken right hand here.
Jesus Christ.
And then I broke this hand in round 7. So I had two broken hands in the fight.
Hard to box.
But your mom wasn't very good, so it was all right. And then...
That's mad. I say, I don't think people know shit like that, do they? They don't know that you're going in injured.
Injured, I know. You can't tell them as well. Obviously, you keep that all to yourself. But yeah, that was horrible. I've been in fights. Kiko Martinez, I've fought him twice. So the first fight with Kiko, which I knocked him out in round 9, was actually harder than the last. So that was tougher than the other fight that went the distance. I felt like I controlled the second fight a lot more. The first fight, although I chinned him, fuck, it was nip and tuck for quite a while. And I was the first time, it's happened twice, but that was the first time I pissed blood after the fight. And my head was everywhere, cuts, hands, busted.
Whenever you're fighting like with fucking broken hands, what's happening in there? Like,
well, you're fighting with, it's sore. Like, I mean, obviously it's sore. Adrenaline gets you through a lot of it, but you're literally, I wasn't punching with a closed fist, so my hands are opening the gloves, so he's probably not feeling it much. But I was hitting them hard to the body because it's a bit softer, and I dropped them to the body twice actually while my hands were broke.
That's mental.
Which,
but like, are you like, I mean, what's keeping you going though? Because I like, mate,
we don't want to lose. You know what I mean? It's over.
That's mental though. Like, that's mental.
Aye.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I've never experienced anything like that in my life. I've never experienced wanting to win that bad, or I probably would hate losing more than I would like winning, though. I'm that sort of person.
It depends. I think it depends on the scenario as well. Like when there's people watching on TV or thousands in an arena and they're cheering you on and people have spent their money. Like in that Kiko fight, the first Kiko fight, it was for the European title. And I remember being fucking exhausted, really, really tired. He was putting the pressure, piling it on. He was hurting me. And there was a few times sitting down in the stool where, because it's early in my career as well, I'm thinking, fuck me, like, this is hard. Like, and they told me before going into the fight, he'd slow down after round four. I remember at round six, like, when the fuck's he going to slow down? He hasn't slowed down yet. I was questioning myself, like, I was genuinely having a fight with myself. Like, I'd love to just take a knee here and fucking get out. I'm not exhausted, but you just
fight. It's mad, though. That's mad mental shit going on there. Because, I was on this one, say, about 2 weeks ago. I got, like, a wee quick. Felt like I was, couldn't do anything for a
what do you call
days.
Them, lads?
A wee quick.
A quick? I call them something else. I call them
a rag nail.
Rag nail.
Aye, so you get a rag nail, and then if you pull a rag nail,
oh, they're
you
fuckers.
Take the quick out of your finger.
Oh, they're so that, sore, them,
oh,
lads.
Mate, and it's still not, do you know what? But I'm going, I'm sitting like, I mean, I write for a living mostly, so I'm sitting typing, and every time I hit my finger, I'm going, you know what I mean? And I'm sitting there going, I'm listening to you going, oh, I was fighting a fucking boxer with two broken hands and going, fuck it, I don't want to lose. I'm sitting going, Koi, bring an edge back. Oh, mate, that's fucking mental. Jesus Christ. That is, like, that's something, though, that's like, that level of toughness is fucking crazy to me, because I don't have that, like, I mean, as if I needed to tell you that, like, that's fucking crazy. So, like, what, somebody asked, right, so hold on, because I asked, I didn't tell people you were coming in, but I did say we were recording with a bona fide Belfast sports champ, and so somebody asked, this is, I think, there's a couple of good questions here, because they just know sports, right, they don't know who's coming in. Also, I tried to write any questions, and I wrote Amy questions. And so people are like, who's your favourite Amy? Amy Winehouse? Amy Lee? I'm like, you fuck off now. Jamie asks, if you could change any rule in your sport, so in boxing, if you could change any rule in boxing, what would it be and why?
Right. Okay. I mean, there'd be many rules I could probably change.
Yeah.
I think, an overriding controlling governing body
instead of all the different
how do you monitor anything when there's different organizations going on, and I mean, you look at what's going on with this Conor Benn kid. He's not allowed to fight in the UK, but he can just go and get a license and fight in America and continue his career. So I think an overriding I was going to say like maybe like a FIFA, but maybe not. But you know what I mean, something that controls it all, oversees it all, and we kind of abide by the same rules, no matter which jurisdiction you're in.
And see, like in terms of being like when you're the boxer, do you choose which sort of organization you're boxing for,
no.
Or is it just by fight?
It just kind of happens.
Like you don't sign.
You can fight for any.
Any
belt going, and it's just about getting... This is how mad boxing is, right? So rankings, in my opinion, should be done on achievements. So fights you've had, who you've beat. If you beat this guy, you jump up a ranking or whatever. But the governing body, so the IBF, WBO, WBC and WBA, they have these conventions once a year where you go to the convention as a manager and argue for your fighter. I want my fighter moved up to number 8, please. He's beat number 12 and he's really good, sells lots of tickets, put him in your rankings, and that's what happens.
Sales are definitely part of it.
Oh, massive. Yeah. If you're popular and you can sell tickets, it's going to be easier
and
for
you. And then do you think that then requires then that popularity requires personality then too, not just boxing skill?
Yeah. Like, I mean, there's so many skillful fighters that
people just don't even know who they are, maybe. Or?
There's people that were way better than me that couldn't have sold half the tickets that I sold. So
It has to be the full package.
Do you know who used to love you, by the way? She probably still does, but Wendy Austin from BBC.
I love her. I like Wendy. Yeah, I love it.
I was working in there with Wendy for a bit in Talkback, and I remember this was, I can't remember, I know the year it was, but I can't remember who you were fighting, but it was like 2011, and I think you were just calling in on the phone maybe just to say you did a fight coming up or whatever. Mate, she loves you, like, I mean, she's
Wendy's
like,
Wendy's nice. Yeah, you know, I've done a thing. I remember doing a thing for Hugo Duncan, does the fucking charity Pudsey Burr thing every year, and I'd won the European title, right? So this is a Kiko fight, and Jackie Fullerton asked me, "Have you got something you can give in, like the we auction off?" I went, "I'll give you my shorts my last fight." So you expect if it was done correctly, there'd someone pay a fair bit of money for them. But Hugo didn't have a clue who it was. And someone offered like 300 quid and he went, "That'll do, 300 quid. And I remember going, "Is he fucking serious, Nick?"
Oh my
God. He sold him for 300 quid. Yeah, they definitely got a grand. Yeah, like, yeah. You know what I mean?
Jesus Christ. "That'll do." It's such a great, that's exactly what Hugo says, isn't it? Like, so the rule you would change it, so you'd sort of change it so it's all like one.
Yeah.
This guy asked a couple of good questions, if you don't mind taking a couple of these, are good. Especially because he doesn't know who it is. So he says, if you could switch to a different sport at the same level, what would you play?
Football.
Yes.
Of course. Every day of the week, you get way more money. And
yeah.
I mean,
I think the way money works in boxing is fucking mental. See, all shit where it's like, you're, obviously you have sponsorships and whatever, but like, you know, I like when fights get cancelled, it's just like...
nothing. Well, that happened to me. The fight where I broke my both hands, the previous fight, someone fucking knocked a big pillar over onto my hand a week before the fight in the lobby of the hotel, and I broke my hand, so I had to put out the fight, right? But it was in Philadelphia. I'd spent, like, training camp cost me 40 grand, maybe, all in. And then you just don't get anything back. Went to see an American lawyer.
I had no idea that it was that sort of...
Well, it was big. I was at a high level, but I always seemed like... And a bit of advice I would always give boxers as well, that like when you're spending your money on training camps, you have to think of it as an investment. You're not like just throwing money away. So I'd always done that and made sure I get out to America for a number of weeks before a fight to get used to
climate
and the time and everything else. So it always cost money, but it was an investment. And the American lawyer we went to see, like, "Man, you're going to get a compensation claim. You're going to lose your loss of earnings from the purse. You're going to earn more money than you actually got." But turns out he was full of shit, and I literally didn't even get close to what the training camp expenses cost. I got a wee measly fucking few quid for a personal injury claim.
Fuck's sake. That's fucking mental. See, that's something I think's mental about it, though, is like, and it's, again, that's so different from, like, writing and things like that, because normally you get a wee bit of money. I mean, I don't know why I'm surprised the boxing is different from writing, but, like, you know, if you write a script, like, you can sell that script, and even if it never gets made, you still got that, you know what I mean? And it's decent money, like, but that's fucking mental. Like, I mean, what...
And then everything else, like, I mean... There's things where, so obviously you have to pay your manager and your trainer as well. So that normally comes out of your purse. So what happens is the fighter gets the money and then he would give whatever, 10% typically to the trainer, 25-20 to the manager. But what was happening with me previous was my money was going to the manager and he was taking his cut and then giving me what was left over. And that's not really had, but I mean, talking about being trusting and naive, that's what I was doing. And then, but everybody's after a few quid. So like, if you fight in America, right? As a British boxer, a board of control member of a British license, they take an overseas levy, even though they've no involvement in the fight.
Oh, just a wee few tax quid.
Well, give us some of that. You know what I mean?
It's stinking whenever they know. Like, so like, if you're paying 10% out to one person, 25 to another, maybe you're paying a couple of percent to them for that shit, and then your tax, and then say an accountant too, like,
I mean, there's
a lot of people taking bites out of
course.
It, and then, And then you're paying for the camp as well. Yeah. So it's, like,
it's not, look, it's not all it seems to be. Yeah, and that's
not
the thing.
It's not the way people, because I think that's the way people think about football too, is they go, and obviously the money is mental, like, but people are going, oh, you're getting 300 grand a week.
Yeah.
You're going, well, they're not really.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Cut it in half.
Yeah.
But I, yeah, I mean, boxing, you can call yourself a professional. Is an odd thing I would change about boxing, whereas, like, you don't have to be that good to be a professional. You know, if you want to be a professional footballer, you have to be shit hot.
Yeah, yeah.
Even if you're playing in League Two or whatever, you're still very, very good.
Yeah, like if you're in like League Two,
yeah,
you're probably better than most people that, like, when you were growing up playing football, maybe even in teams.
Yeah.
You're probably better than all of them.
Of course. I mean, I remember playing with these wonder kids. I thought I was half decent at football, but playing with guys who were outstanding, and they end up, you know, the play for Balmain.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? No,
and that's it. Which is an all right level, but it's not the same. But you can be any clown. Like, literally, if you can hold your hands up and punch straight and be fit enough for four rounds, you can get a professional license and call yourself a professional fighter.
But then, so, like, how long did you spend doing amateur and then making that jump across? Then?
I was very young when I started boxing, seven, which is probably too young. And I turned pro when I was 22.
Mm.
So I had maybe, if you look at Wikipedia, I don't know who fucking fills this information in, but they said I had like 100, and I think the record on Wikipedia is 108 fights and 100 wins, which is wrong. It's more like 200 fights, maybe more, and 50 defeats.
Fuck.
So I was doing it for quite a while before.
That's a shitload of fights, like.
Yeah, yeah.
Isn't it? That's mental. How much though does that, like, contribute? Like, you know, if you're doing that many fights, how much does that then contribute to, like, success?
Of course it helps. I think it always, it's not always the scenario, but I think someone with a good amateur background has a better chance of making it as a pro. Doesn't always have to be the way, but that's typically what happens. And I had a lot of fights, out of maybe 40, 50 international fights representing Ireland. And I had a pro style as well already as an amateur. Like, I wasn't a mover and, you know, fancy Dan, and I liked the fight.
Mm.
And it kind of suited the pro game.
Yeah, yeah, well, definitely. I mean, I remember those first few times, like, when, like, there was, like, when you were doing, like, massive fights that were on, like, televised and all.
Yeah.
Like, it was, because I grew up in the 90s, like, boxing, you know, was huge. Like, you know, maybe not every Friday, but every couple of Fridays, there was a massive fight night on. It would have been, like,
Ben and Eubank.
Ben and
Eubank, you know,
Steve,
I mean?
Collins, Ray Close, like,
yeah.
Prince Nassim and all that, like, you know. And then, obviously, you had, like, the heavyweight stuff at that time. It was, like, Evander Holyfield, Frank Bruno, and fucking people like that and all. It was just, like, it was fucking mental. And I remember, like, whenever you were coming through doing those big fights, it kind of felt like that too, like, where there was, like, that kind of, like, it isn't just the fight, it's the personality and all.
Well, it was big here. And look, to be honest, obviously everyone knows I had the fallouts with McGuigan and stuff, but Barry was very, very good at putting me in the right places and get me interviews. Like, there's guys who, I was on Paul McCluskey's undercard, but because Barry was my manager and he was talking about me, I was probably getting a bit more media attention than him.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe that's not right, but that's just the way
it
was.
But how much that is to do with that sort of personality and being I'm going to say personality, I'm talking about that sort of thing where you're able to come out and chat and that's crack.
Yeah.
And, like, you know,
There's a bit of that. And people have to take to you. It's all right, a manager, you know, he can put you in front of cameras, but you need to be able to
gotta fucking do it, like,
say something. Like,
what's the crack there? Do you speak now?
No. I'll never ever speak to them people ever again.
It's mental, although, when you've spent so long with people, isn't it?
I know. It's sad, and it was something that really ate me up for a while, but not anymore.
There's definitely a time, I think. I mean, it's one of them things, isn't it, where, like, there's definitely a time where you've just got to fucking cut losses, like, and just go, fuck it. Like, life's...
Yeah, yeah.
Because some people will go, some people go, oh, life's too short, you should just fucking make that up. But life's too short if it's fucking...
And to be honest, the last couple of years it was with them. Like, I hung about in hope that maybe the things that people were saying and the things that were happening were wrong, and and there was going to be an explanation for it. But I probably hung around for them a bit too long, out of a bit of a loyalty to them. But it was, it was just too much.
It's not, I wouldn't, obviously nowhere near that sort of profile, but I had a wee thing like that where, with an agent I was with before, where I was with him for a long time, and you kind of, you sort of nearly are going, oh, we're doing business together, but we're sort of mates.
Yeah.
And then you go, actually, I'm getting fucking rid of here. Like, it's you know.
Happens.
It's fucking, it can be completely melting, and then it's hard to make that thing and stick to it then, you know, and you're sort of going, fuck's sake. But like, so this is the last question from this guy was, what is the real Breakfast of Champions? I'm presuming, when you're training.
I used to eat. I mean, there was a time, it depends really. Like I used to, there was a time where I was doing a paleo diet.
Right.
To make super bantamweight, which is 8 stone 10. It was so hard for me to make. Like,
I'd be like, you fight one of my legs. Do you know what I mean? It's mental.
Do you know what I mean? But, I mean, I was, my walk around weight when I was fighting at 8 stone 10, I was probably 10 and a half stone.
Fuck.
And it wasn't fat. It was still reasonably lean. So I had to lose it for a bit to get down. And doing this paleo diet, like some people, their bodies need carbohydrates and to function. But I was all right. I could eat.
That's the caveman meat. Thing? Caveman, it's just meat and like, is everything then raw, is it then?
Meat. No, you can not still cook meat, it. It can still be cooked. The meat and the veg or whatever. Just no carbs, nothing white. No dairy.
Fuck me.
So, yeah, I used to have a ribeye steak and 2 fried eggs for my breakfast.
Oh,
it was lovely.
The gladiator breakfast. Jesus Christ.
A handful of nuts. It was great.
Mate, how do see that there? And like, would you be working with do you work with a nutritionist or do you just
At the start, Shane McGuigan was doing my nutrition, and to be honest, he's pretty clued in on nutrition. But that dad then started to get harder for me. Like, there'd be times where, you know, I could function on it for a while, and then the longer I was on it, like say 3 weeks out from a fight. At night time, like, if I stood up from I'm preparing for a fight. If I stood up off the sofa too quick,
you get a wee head rush. Fuck.
Like, so, I definitely needed the change, but it worked for a certain amount of time. But then, once I left them, they like to keep everything kind of in-house, you know, and Shane, in fairness, he knew a lot about nutrition, but he wasn't a nutritionist. Mm. And when I jumped ship, I got looked after by my own nutritionists and different S&C guys. And
what's S&C?
Strength and conditioning.
Right.
So the guy called Michael Lands looked after me from Belfast here, and another guy in Manchester called Simon Bitcoin.
Right.
Not Bitcoin. Yeah. Bitcoin, who worked for Man City as well.
Right, fuck, okay.
So he was great, really good guy, and knew his stuff as well.
And you like, this is a question, and obviously I'm focused on food things here because I'm fucking starving today, but what are you cooking that all yourself, or is it like, do you have somebody come in and do that?
No, well, I'd normally just cook myself. A lot of the times then you would get these kind of, you'd have your nutritionist, you know, one of the food prep companies, and he would tell them what he wants or what he needs. And they prepare them, and it'd be a microwave job as well. But I like cooking. I don't mind cooking. In Vegas, we had chefs a couple of times. Sounds a bit flashed, doesn't it?
Like a good time.
Yeah, it was good. It was good.
That's mental. Like, what's it like over? I've never been to Vegas.
Oh, what a place.
Love. I don't think I'm allowed. I love roulette and all. Like,
you are allowed?
No.
You said that like you're not allowed in America with a criminal record.
Oh, no, no. Sorry. They'll allow me.
Yeah.
I don't think I should go there. Like, we've talked about it once or twice. We sort of go, is that somewhere you maybe go for a holiday? Or like, obviously I'm a fucking dickhead and I love Sting and he was doing a residency there and I'd like fully love, I would fully, do you know what? You can spend stupid money and sit on the stage. And I'm like, I'd love to just sit there. I want to waft him when he walks past, you know? And so I'm going like, I'd probably fucking go do that. And I'm just going, do you know what? Like, I know if I went over with a wee bit of money to a roulette table, it could just get ugly. Like, you know, I'll be, I love it. Like, it's such a great game.
They get you back in. So if you're winning, like someone, they know when they come things. Over and they say, look, we'll offer you a free suite for if you want to stay and just to get the money back. So they're crafty, but
fuck. See, I would worry about that.
And then the more drunk you get, free drink and all.
No, yeah, you start making stupid shit.
Yeah.
See,
do you know a wee fact about Sting, that you know the P Diddy song that he ripped off?
P Diddy ripped the police off.
Yeah. So it was the police, wasn't it?
Aye, stupid amount of money there.
$2,000 a day.
That's fucking.
Sting gets on for the rest of his life.
I'd love that.
It's all right, isn't it?
I'd love to be ripped off that way. Just go.
I know.
You know what I mean? You're sitting there going, oh, fuck, I'm skint this afternoon. That's all right. Enough, $2,000 coming in tomorrow. I saw a video of Sting there the other day. He was walking into the, you know, that movie, June, that fucking sand movie. Right. That's right. Here, that must be why. That's right, mate. I was going, Sting was walking into the premiere, the second one. I don't know where it was, but I love him because, sorry, Gordon, I love him because he's a cunt, right? Like, he was down there and in.
Who's Gordon? Is that Sting? Is that his real name? Yeah. Gordon,
so
what?
Gordon Sumner. So is it? Yeah, he's walking in. He's walking in wearing all, like, it's like a black leather thing, like a black leather jacket, but with like a, I think he, I can't remember because I only watched it once, but it was like, I think he might have had like a Shima type thing, all black and white. Everything was black and white. And he's walking in with a woman and everything's black and white. And some woman shouts over, oh my God, it's Trudy and Sting. And he's like, this isn't Trudy, it's a daughter. And it's their daughter. And I'm going, all right, Sting, you fucking weird. But he's sort of walking with a real, like, you know, like, I
could be Trudy.
Like, it could have been. You're going, fuck's sake, Gordon. Like, you know. But I don't know. Like, there's something about Vegas scares me a wee bit.
Oh, it's the best place in the world. I get that. Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing place.
Where's the best place you fall? Is it up there, like?
Vegas and MGM. That was good.
That's fucking mental.
I stayed in the MGM, right? So we stayed off a strip. There's a boxer called Robert Guerrero. We rented his house,
right,
kind of an area called Blue Diamond, just away off a strip. Because obviously when you're out there for 4 weeks, you don't want to be
amongst the madness.
So the fight week you move into the MGM, and they give me a nice suite, which was lovely.
Yeah.
And then they came up to my room, like, literally 2 hours after staying in this suite, which I was delighted about. And I said, no, sir, you're in the wrong room. We're moving you to the Sky Loft. So the Sky Loft is...
Sorry, love the name.
All right. So
I'll take it.
The Sky Loft is... Your man brought me to the Sky Loft and kind of described it as... It's not really a hotel. It was in the MGM, but it's a separate hotel.
Mental.
It's 5-star, MGM's 4.
Right.
They bring you up this lift and you've got your own butler. You've got a 2-floor fucking apartment.
That's
a steam room, a sauna, or sorry, a shower, which turns into a steam room as well. You were getting fruit platters delivered every day. But on the way up, he was kind of like, look, sir, we're very discreet. We can, anything you need, we can get you anything. I think he was talking about like brass and fucking... drugs and guns and fucking whatever.
What's brass?
Brassers, like women.
Oh, right, sorry. Sorry, mate. I've never heard that in my life.
Have you not?
No.
Fuck
me. I was like, brass? I was like, is that some sort of drug? I don't know about.
Yeah. No, a brass? You know what a brass is.
No, I didn't know it.
Maybe that's me being in England all too much.
I know, I've never heard that in my life.
That's maybe an English term. Yeah,
no, mate, that's funny. Fuck me, like, this butler. Was he American?
He was... Mexican.
Oh, wow. That's fucking.
But I never used him. You can't be calling. I mean, he says, I'll get you an ink, but I'm not going to say, yo.
But I think that's the thing people from here have. Because I think if you were American,
you'd
have no beef getting him to fucking go and get me whatever. Yeah. You know what I mean? But from here, I think I always feel like a wanker. Like, we hotel, we stand down south. It is lovely. It's 5-star as well. You wee dick, right? But Dan's are going to be going, fuck off, twank, it's not the MCM, right? But like, they, you know, even when they ask, like, you know, can they help you with bags and all?
Oh.
I'm just always,
oh,
like,
I don't like, I know, like, just I'm do like, it myself.
Nah, I'll do that, like, yeah, I hate that. And you know what I'm totally not smooth with? The tips, like, I'm the worst at it, like. Oh. I'll try to tip somebody smooth and end up, like, you
just
know.
Just in your hand, like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, try to do that and then drop it, or, you know, I'll try to do it and be like, realize I've no cash on me because I hardly ever carry cash, like, and I'm just like, I'll sign for it at the end of the week, I promise.
I do this thing when I'm tipping, even in restaurants around Belfast, and because you always want, I hate the thought that the tips are getting split amongst them all, right?
I know, so you want to tip
if
the person
someone's
who's,
been good, I want to tip them, because your guy might be a fucking arsehole, you know what I mean? So I would always make the point, and Christine, my wife, hates it. She's
when
like,
you
just
go,
fucking
do you
leave
get
the
this?
Money on the thing.
Yeah.
No, but I go, or like walk over to them and give them the money, and she's like, it looks like I'm trying to, and I'm not doing
I
this
I
at
know
all.
What you mean, yeah.
It looks like people, you want people to see that you're giving this girl money. I'm going, ugh.
Yeah, but I know what you mean, because the split melts me, but you know what melts me too? I can't remember where this place was, but like I was tapping for to pay for things, but also for the tip. Like where I just say it comes to £61 or whatever, and I go, here, make it up to 75 or something, right? And then I'm going like, I go to do that, and then somebody was like, oh, here, we don't get them when you tap for it.
Oh.
And I was like, what do you mean? And she was like, yeah, like you can definitely leave that, but that doesn't come to the staff.
Right,
and I was going,
I'd boycott that place.
I was like, well, I can't remember where, I literally can't remember where it was. It was definitely here though, and I went, right, hold on. And it was like, you nearly want to.
So the owner just gets the tips.
And I'm like, if you tap, and I was going, you nearly want to walk outside and fucking lift the tenner.
Well, sometimes I ask for, if you're doing that in that scenario, because you always want to give them cash because you're unsure what happens when you tap a card. Just get cash back if they give cash back.
Aye. Must,
know what I mean?
Do you know what I need to do? I need to start being better with having a wee bit of coin on me, but I never do because I hate it.
Yeah.
It melts me. But what was I going to say then? So whiskey's killing it and you're doing commentary and punditry. What sort of things then have you got like lining up for this the rest of the year? Obviously, you got that going into the States.
Yeah, I've got that going into the States. Released the book at the end of last year, but that the paperback's going to be coming out soon, so there'll be a wee bit of promotion around that.
How much involvement did you have with making that? Were you actually sitting down typing?
No, I didn't type. There was a guy called Paul Gibson, like Ghost. Do you know Paul?
I've met Paul. Yeah,
lovely guy,
sound guy,
and
yeah.
He's very very smart.
He did Eamon McGee's book
what
as well.
Book.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
What a story.
Yeah, it's fucking crazy.
Do you know there was talk of? I don't know if I'm giving too much away here, but I was told it'll say it anyway. But there was talk of that being made into a movie.
I was involved. Well, sorry, I was involved in trying to get it made into a TV show. Yeah.
Right. Well, do you know who one of the actors suggested actors was for Ian McGee?
No.
Jamie Dornan. Like, Ian McGee, I love Ian McGee, but he's an ugly bastard.
No,
you know what
well,
I mean?
Here, he's not Jamie Dornan, is he? Yeah, Jesus Christ. That'll be like getting Daniel Day-Lewis to play me. You know what I mean? That's fucking mental.
Apparently,
that's crazy.
Apparently, that's
there was,
the story.
So this place I was working with, production company or whatever, had gotten, I think they got the rights to the book briefly, but like there was competition around the rights because it was a fucking brilliant book and it won the Sports
William
book
Hill
of the year
Sports
and all,
book,
and,
that's right.
And I read it. And I had done like a treatment, you know, on how you would make it into a 6-part series and like all that sort of stuff and had done script sample and whatever. And I went over and I met Paul and I chatted to Paul. I chatted to him and then I met him as well. I definitely feel like we did both. I definitely talked to him on the phone because I think he might have been living in Spain.
He lives in Spain still, does.
But I'm pretty sure I met him here, and then I went and met Eamon as well a couple of times.
Did he? Just before you go in, did he tell you where he lived?
Eamon?
No, or Paul.
No, no.
So, and this is something that really annoys me. He said he lived in, I think, for a while anyway, lived in Barcelona.
Right, right.
He says Barcelona. Like, you're fucking from Belfast, mate. You know what I mean? Just say it. Say it properly. Barcelona, Barcelona.
Belfast. That's mental. No, that's fucking mental. No, he was, I think I met him somewhere like fucking White's Tavern or Kelly Sellers or something for a chat, and then went and met Eamon as well a couple of times, and I was fully up for it, and then the company just they sacked the woman that was working on it, and it just fucking evaporated, and I was sitting going,
it'd be awesome, like
I've done all this
life.
Work, it was fucking, yeah, it was a
you wouldn't
fucking,
think it's real, like his life is
it
mental.
Seems, it just goes
fiction,
from
like,
fucking
up.
This crazy situation into that one, into the next one. You're going, what the fuck? Like, it's fucking mad. But then there was one night, I think he pocket dialed me one night. Like, this was like maybe like 6 months after I sort of said, listen, they've...
Paul or McGee?
Eamon. Yeah. So I shit myself, right? Because, so like, I just remember like, I definitely got in touch because it smells me sometimes in TV stuff is sometimes something will just dry up and people just don't tell anyone.
Yeah.
They just leave you sitting and then you're wondering, going, what the fuck? And I hate that. I'll always say, listen, if I'm working on something and it's not happening anymore, you'll always get a call or an email saying, listen, these are going for this or whatever. So I got in touch with them and said, listen, as far as I know, I'm not going to be working on this anymore. The company said they're not doing it. X, Y, and Z. No problem. Then about 6 months later, about fucking, you know, 11:45, your fucking phone rings. And I'm like, oh, fuck, it's Emma McGee. And then I'm looking at it going, I should answer it in case there's something wrong. And I'm going, why would it be phoning me? I answered it. It was just pocket dial. It was just in his pocket. But I was going, fuck, I'm worried here. I don't know if he's going to fucking smack me because this isn't getting made, you know. Nah, he was, he's very sound though, to be fair.
Awesome book. I like him. He's good. A hard time. Misunderstood a bit, I think. But he's all right.
Yeah. He was very sound to me, to be fair. But it was fucking... There's a lot of sadness in that book as well.
Yeah.
But you were saying about yours and it's coming out in paperback later this year.
Yeah. So it should be coming out very, very soon because there was a couple of wee mistakes actually in the hardback that needed changed, and they allowed me to change them and sort them out for the paperback. So I was kind of thinking, like, I mean, who the fuck, if a book we're talking about and it's been published and there's a lot of promotion around it and the hardback version before Christmas, who wants a paperback? But then when you think about it, like, who wants a fucking hardback?
I know.
I'd never buy a hardback. No, they're a pain in the arse. If you're in the airport, you're buying a paperback. So
hardbacks, I think hardbacks are grand if it's like something that you're
on a shelf.
It's going to sit there. You'll read it once and it'll sit there. Yeah. Paperback is like, you know, you're on a plane, some, you're taking some away with you, like, you know. I'm working on a thing at the minute. I don't want to say too much about it, but I'll say enough to intrigue. But no, I'm working on a thing at the minute that's about, it's a true story about like a prison break. Right. And I've done something on
a true story?
I've done something on a similar prison break before.
Like Jerry Kelly stuff? No.
Jesus, no. So I did some before. On Radio Ulster, this was fucking mental. It was about a prison break out of the Crumlin Road, which was a guy, two guys get out of their cells anyway, but when they were going across the top of the wall, they fell. Like, they were tethered to each other, and the tether broke, and basically one of them, they both fell off the wall, and one of them fell inside the prison, the other one fell outside, and so one of them got caught, and the other one got away, but they both completely smashed themselves falling off the thing. He got out, he was a young guy, he got out using a French textbook, so he cut a hole in the window and then lined it with the book so that he could get out without cutting himself, and the two of them got out of this hole in the cell. This was in like the 60s, and it was fucking mental though. The whole story was mental because he'd been put away for putting up Sinn Féin posters when it was a proscribed organisation. Right. And he was really young. He was only like 18. And when they put him into the jail, they were going to house him with the what was essentially like an IRA wing in the prison. And the people that were in that unit there wouldn't accept him because he didn't give a speech in the court saying that he didn't recognise the court, but he said,
right,
he told me that it was just like they brought him in and went, oh, you're that guy, guilty,
yeah,
see you later.
Didn't get a chance
to literally just, and he said there was no, it was like, this cunt, bye, and they were like, that's when you're meant to shout it, and he was like, well, like, right, I didn't know, and so they were like, well, you're not,
very harsh,
they were like, you're not staying here, and so they put him in like a general sort of population bit, with like, you know, ordinary decent criminals, all that, and he became then interested in going, well, I'm in here for this many years, I might as well fucking like do some exams. So he was the first person to ever do like exams out of the criminal road jail. Already got it all set up. So he's this sort of fascinating guy, and he basically escaped, and the escape was mental because he went to the other guy was from over that way, and he went to that guy's house, and you know, your man's ma gave him, like, you know, clean clothes, and but also
so,
went.
So a prod? The other guy was a prod?
No, they were both. Oh, there right, were because okay. The other guy ended up becoming like some MLA for Sinn Féin, right, or something. Right. But he got out, went to that house, and they were like, right, you've got your clean clothes, they're starting to raid the streets, bye. and he had to leave. He said his fucking hip was smashed, and he got away on top of a lorry, like, and
Jesus Christ.
Eventually gets down to Tyrone and then got out and went and lived out south, but became like a businessman and worked for I think he was like the Ireland, became like Western Europe or something manager for like Unilever, like a big fucking big Jesus. company, and but then had to get in the 80s, had to get like a like permission to come back up here and all from Thatcher's government. It's a fucking mad story, but I'm working on something that's like one that, like, I did a thing on Radio Ulster, met that guy. He was dressed amazing. Like, he was wearing like fucking, he had the like a fedora hat and fucking suit, and he was dressed like fucking like he was going to a Frank Sinatra concert. It was fucking amazing. And but this other one's more about like spies, but it was an Irish guy from Limerick helped break out a spy who was like a Russian double agent that the British had caught and put him in Wormwood.
This is a true story too.
Yeah. And this is a proper, this is like a cartoon prison break though, of like rope ladder over the wall, and it worked. Like, Jesus. It's fucking, it's wild. So I'm working on that, but it's fucking, oh mate, writing is so slow. But what was I gonna say? Thanks a million for coming in. It's been eye opening for me. Like, it's sort of good. Like, I think there's something class about here where I feel like this place kind of over delivers in terms of like the amount of talent that's in this place, and the sort of like, you know, for sport and like comedy and art and things like that, here is like tiny wee place that like,
no, I agree,
really over delivers. And it's that sort of thing where it's like, I love seeing people from here doing well. I think sometimes people, there's definitely a thing here as well though of like, some people don't like seeing people doing well from here.
But
like,
there's I get that as well. Yeah. But there's a lot of people.
Did you have a lot of when you were
fighting? you get loads out there, loads and loads of that.
What was it like? Sorry, I should ask us before we do wrap up, because I thought this was interesting, because a couple of our lads have had this. See, when you lose a fight, people like give you shit. They don't like. That not happen a lot.
I mean, I lost 3 fights as a pro. It was different for me. I didn't get so much shit. I suppose there's probably a wee bit online mainly. Nothing.
I just comments and stuff.
Which is just the way the world is at the minute.
It's rare though, isn't it? Because I sort of go like, I sort of think like, I know that there's some comedians that like, when I'll tend to get wound up by a comment where I go, well, that's not fucking anywhere near truth.
Yeah.
And then it fucks me off because I'm going, I'd love to fucking slap her.
Oh, I know, yeah, yeah.
But then there's other comedians take stuff that's really personal. And I go, it's rare. But like, I've seen some of the stuff that people were saying to a couple of other lads when they got beaten recently, and you're going like, you can't be like licking people's holes when they're winning and then give them shit when they lose.
No,
like,
I know. You're there for, I like, completely, you know, agree. But it was all right. There was a bit of it, but not loads. And definitely, trying to think, was there ever an occasion where anyone gave me grief when I was out somewhere? I don't think so. I can't remember anyway. So normally, I've been very lucky. Like, people have been very supportive of me. So something I genuinely appreciate.
Well. Thanks a million for coming in. It's been great, and good luck with the, keep an eye for Stablemate. House of Jackal is flying. I know, I'm hitting it down there going, keep an eye for this thing, keep an eye for this product that's under the table, and keep an eye for that. It's in Tesco now, and we'll see you in the next episode. And the paperback book's coming out as well, so keep an eye for that. We'll see you in the next one. Cheers for coming.
Thanks,
mate.
Bye.
Oh, no.